The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented by Coors Light. I'm Will Perdue, joined by former Bull and the youngest MVP in NBA history, Derrick Rose.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Coming up on the show, we'll talk with Derrick about the current era of load management and how that would have impacted his career, why he felt like he was being targeted by the media after winning the MVP, why he refers to Joakim Noah as soft socks, that's right, soft socks, and how he's gained the respect of former and current players. Plus, why the door is still open for Derrick Rose to potentially play for the Bulls in the future. Last time I saw you was November 1st, the first game back in the Detroit Pistons uniform.
Yes.
I observed you talking to the media. I watched how you interacted with everybody. Even when I was coming down the hallway of the United Center, I was kind of trying to avoid you a little bit because it seemed like you were being pulled in so many directions. But you actually came to me, and I was so impressed with what I saw, I recognized a different Derrick Rose. Is this the best you've ever felt mentally, physically, and emotionally?
I believe so. You know, I've been through a lot. I was a kid when I first started off here. I was shy to the media. I didn't want to talk to the media at all. And it was a learning process. And I didn't have a mentor at the time. BJ could do all that he could do, but he never had the talent that I had or the spotlight that I had. So he kind of let me just learn by actually just thrusting me in there and letting me figure out myself.
So in the book, podcast by Rick Bucher,
yes,
you talked about, and correct me if I make any wrong statements, how when you came in, you were stubborn.
Yeah.
You really, as you just pointed out, weren't very knowledgeable about the media.
Yeah.
You weren't changing for anybody.
No.
You were going to be Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
But you wanted to come to Chicago, even though everybody was going to compare you to Michael Jordan. But was Chicago really the best place for a young Derrick Rose straight out of college?
I think so. Like, I think my story is my story. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way but how it played out. You know, I achieved a lot here. I love to hear this is my hometown. But when I look at, like, the old footage of the documentaries, it kind of remind me of, like, a younger Mike Tyson in a way where you got this talented, like, gifted individual and they just locked in into their craft. And they don't care about what's going on the outside. They don't care about who they're getting compared to. I didn't care about who I was getting compared to. And I looked at it where MJ was a two guard. I'm a point guard. So how can you compare me? That's how I was looking at it. So once I got all that thrown on me and the way people were, like, coming at me, like you said, I wanted to be stubborn. I wasn't going to change who I was. And like I was telling Rick, after a while, why should I elaborate on the answer when I know you're going to kill me in the paper the next day? Or I know that you don't like me as a person. Why should I give you my real answer? No, I'm going to act like I don't want to talk to you, and that's that.
And listening to that podcast by Rick Bucher and friends, I actually learned something from you. Because I remember when you were going through all that.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to meet you through BJ.
Yes.
And I was literally talking to BJ, and I was telling BJ, I said, BJ, they're killing him in the media. Just have him answer the questions. And I saw the stubbornness.
Yeah.
But what I didn't know was the background.
Yeah.
How difficult was it for you and for your family to go through all that? Because you were just being Derrick Rose. You were a guy that was just coming off an MVP season that was injured.
Yeah.
But you were given no slack whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a different time. In the sports world, period. Now we have to term load management. Like, I don't think that I would have like taken as far as Kawhi, as far as like they're really being cautious about his injury or whatever he has. But if load management would have been around, who knows? I probably would have still been a Chicago Bull by now. But it wasn't around, and I was doing what was best for myself, my family, and around that time I had to think solely for myself. Like, my family was telling me one thing and they really didn't care. They was just worried about if I was healthy and if my mental was all right. And when I was around them, they knew I was all right. It was just the outside that was wondering what was going on. And once I figured things out then, it was just a smooth ride until I got traded.
You know, you mentioned load management.
Yeah.
There's a guy that's now come into the league in Zion.
Yeah.
Who plays a very similar style to you.
Yes.
It's aggressive. It's vicious.
Yeah.
But also he puts a lot of torque on his body.
Yes.
Now granted, he weighs more than you do.
Yes.
But considering what you went through without the term of load management.
Yeah.
And now you have load management, and this guy's already injured.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of advice would you give the rookie?
I mean, it's a lot. First is your weight. Like, I remember playing for the USA teams, and I think my second time, and we were going to, like, doctor. We were seeing all these doctors, and I was getting MRIs, and I was still feeling pain in my knees certain days, and it all came down to my weight. Nobody said nothing about my weight. I think I was around, like, 212, 214 at that time. That was too heavy. I was too heavy, but it was the little things. So I had to watch my diet. Once I watched my diet, I was fine. That was something I didn't have to worry about. But Zion is in his own lane. Just being that heavy, playing the way that he plays, he's explosive. He's an athlete I think nobody never saw before. So his path is going to be totally different than mine. You know what I mean? Like, he has to, for one, learn the league. I had a chance to learn the league, play through my mistakes, and I got injured year three or four. Got injured right away. So he has to learn his body right away, learn the league, learn what his skills are, work on his skills. Like, they were, like, killing me and my MVP year, and it was like, man, like, you didn't even let me get to the rest of my game. Like, the three-pointer came in right after I got injured. You ain't let me work on you all this work. You seen me work to get to the MVP. You think I wasn't going to work on my three-pointer? You get what I'm saying? Like, you think I wasn't going to work on that? Like, but that was the area that they could attack. We seen that you ain't do this yet, so we're going to attack that. And you're not a three-point, blah, blah, blah. But I was still producing, and that's what I didn't get.
But you obviously feel that the media was unfair to you because – do you feel it was personal because you wouldn't allow them into your space?
Yeah, it was kind of personal. It was personal. But at the same time, looking back at it and knowing where I'm from, knowing the history of Chicago, like, it is what it is.
I found it interesting in the podcast that the transformation, it seemed like to me, for who Derrick Rose is now, the player, happened in New York. You made a comment that really caught my ear. Is you said, when I got to New York, I had to learn how to be the third option.
Yes.
Because you were playing behind Melo and KP.
Yes.
Per se.
Yes.
But you said you had to learn how to do it. But I want you to tell me, how did you do it? How did you become? How did you make the proper adjustment, probably more mentally than anything else, to be that third option? But as you pointed out, still putting up good numbers on a nightly basis.
I think it was part of the system, too. If we would have had, like, a open system where we're playing the up-tempo type game, I think it would have changed. It would have been in my favor because of my style of play. But because we played the triangle, we were in the triangle, it's mostly for post-up players. So I had to play behind like Melo and KP. No knock on it, not saying it was wrong or anything, but that was just the facts, what I had to deal with. And along the way, like I found out like during spot, because it's not about stats either. Like I play to win, like no matter what. I play to win if I have two, if I have 20, I just play to win. But along the way, I figure out during parts of the game that first off, you have to be very efficient. Like you have to shoot shots that you know that you can make. When I was in New York, they were telling me that I had to shoot 4 threes a game. I'm like, why?
They were specific enough to say you had to shoot 4 a game.
Like 4 a game.
It wasn't just we need you to shoot threes.
Yeah, it was like 4 a game. I'm thinking like, man, I already shoot 12 shots. So if I shoot 4, that's taking me down to 8 shots. I have to be very, very efficient on. I'm not doing that. If I'm getting 16 or 17 on the way that I play and I got 3-point shooters around me, why should I have to shoot threes at that time? And that was another part, I mean, another way I was being stubborn, where it's like, no, I'm not shooting. I think that year I really didn't shoot threes at all because I was being stubborn. And it's like, what part of the game is that? Like, I don't know if I got 3-point shooters with me, but yeah, that was just a part that I just had to get over, and they didn't understand it.
So it's kind of interesting.
But think about it. What other point guard there since I left averaged 16 or 17 points?
None. But the next thing is it's amazing how things come first full circle, because the day we're doing this interview,
yeah,
Melo signs a contract with Portland, passes his physical, and is actually able to play. What kind of advice would you give to him, knowing that he's probably going to be the third option behind Damian and CJ?
I think I don't have to give Melo no advice. He's an OG. Like he understands the league. He understands the game. He's an intelligent guy. Like he knows where he has to fit in. Like I don't think that he's trying to steal no shine on that team. I know he probably feels very grateful to be back. And I think anybody in that position is very grateful and you feel fortunate, you know what I mean? So it's something we've been doing our whole lives, is fighting and clawing to get where we're at. And he's from Baltimore, so he'll be able to figure it out easy.
I tell you what, man, you just keep leading me into the next question, so thank you.
Yeah.
I want to compliment you because the fact that you stayed Derrick Rose, and I don't mean to talk in the third person, but I think you've been rewarded for your resiliency. So hear me out on this one. Considering everywhere you've been, you take the 50-point game in Minnesota.
Yes.
And how your teammates reacted.
Yes.
And how you didn't really react until your teammates reacted. You get all the love from social media, LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Paul.
Yes.
You come back to Chicago in that November 1st game, MVP chance. I had somebody within the organization of the Pistons tell me about your first game in Indiana. The moment you got up off the bench to come to the scorer's table, you got a standing ovation. What is it about Derrick Rose amongst the players and the fans where you're A, so popular, but B, they so badly want you to succeed?
I don't know about the popular, but I will say, man, BJ talk about this a lot, and I think it's the struggle. Like, everybody struggle in life, and a lot of people pretend and act like they don't, and you wear a mask on majority of the day, or a lot of people wear a majority of their life, and you try to hide the dark side or the down days. My down days were on TV. It was publicized. So I wasn't able to hide like that. So I think that's one of the reasons why I have a calm temper, is because leading up to all this dramatics and me leaving and, I mean, everything, the whirlwind I was in, the eye of the storm, like I always stayed calm. And I think that's just part of who I am, my character. And when I was younger, I used to think the same thing. Like, I almost got jumped like a couple of times. And I didn't. They didn't jump me because I was calm. They didn't know what to expect. And I walked away. I was nervous as hell on the inside, but they didn't do it for some reason. And now that I'm older, it's probably, they probably thought I probably had something like a weapon or something on me. Like, they're serious. They probably thought I had something on me. And it just didn't happen. And it came from my calmness. Like understanding where I was at, understanding the situation, and just standing on my two feet. It's whatever. Like, I didn't back down. And that's, my biggest advantage.
Where did that calmness come from?
I have no idea. From God, the universe, who knows? Because my mom is totally different than me. My brother, my family is totally different than me. I'm the calmest one in my family, entire family.
I want to make sure I get this on tape. So you already answered it, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah.
But I'll ask you, do you believe that you and the Bulls under Tom Thibodeau would have won a championship if you didn't get injured?
I mean, if...
It's okay to answer the question.
That's a lot of the if. Yeah, I mean, that was something that we were fighting for. I think we were very focused and locked in on that. That was one of the goals. But that was something that was in the past. And the memories and everything, we will always cherish the memories. But we're going to leave that in the past.
I know you don't like to come across as boisterous, but I'm going to take that as a yes. All right, so you talked about your family.
Yeah.
PJ.
Yes.
You mentioned that you would mind if your son grew up to be like Joakim Noah.
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, Joe, I think he wouldn't mind me saying this. He grew up a silver spoon. so I call him soft socks, you know what I mean? And that's no knock for people that grew up like him. But I used to ask him a lot of questions when he was on the team. I mean, like, from grammar school, high school, college, just asking the activities that he got into when he was older, because he had access to everything. He was financially stable. His parents were around here and there.
Something you knew nothing about.
Yeah, yeah. And I used to ask about some of the diplomatic schools that he used to attend in New York, how he traveled to France, and how he traveled internationally. And this whole time, I'm keeping tips, like, I'm keeping them in my head, because it's like, all right, when my son grow up, he's going to be in the exact same position as Joakim. Like, Joakim Pops, a lot of people don't know, like, Arthur Ashe, like, found his dad.
Right.
Like took him from his parents, Arthur Ashe.
Right.
Took him from his parents, put him in tennis school, academy, and kind of, like, groomed him into being a, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
That's unreal. I played tennis when I was younger, so to hear that, I was just thrilled with just hearing it. So I used to ask some questions, but to make it short, Joakim, my PJ will end up being somewhere around Joakim, and what drawn me to Joakim is his mentality, how he's independent. Like, he's not living off his pop's legacy. He's made his own legacy in a way. And that's something that I was always loved, and I was drawn to him for that.
So you mentioned legacy.
Yeah.
What would you like your legacy to be?
I mean, I really don't know. I'm only 31. I'm making a transition to, I'm already an OG in the league. I think I got the most years on the team right now. So I'm making a transition to being a vet, to trying to become a businessman. Like, of course, I'm a novice in it right now, but it's nothing wrong with picking people's brains and trying to understand and learn from everyone that I encounter.
So still being written?
Yeah, still being written.
So I got to ask this one too.
Yeah.
Is the book closed on your Bulls career, or is there still another chapter to be written?
I mean, I like I always say, you probably have to ask Jerry about that. I have one more year on this deal. I mean, I'm here for 2 years, so after next year, I'll be a free agent. So who knows? That's how I'm going to leave that. Who knows?
Are you getting into politics after this?
No.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. Thanks for listening.